And we're holding on page Yud Dalet in Megillah, the last words of the page, middle of Ois Yud Gimel, towards the end, almost the end of Ois Yud Gimel. Still working through the drushes on the Psukim of the Megillah, explaining what happened behind the scenes over there. We have to remember, as I mentioned in a previous shiur, the Megillah was written while Ahasuerus was still alive, so there was a limit how much they could put in terms of the actual things that happened without getting him upset. So a lot of things they had to only hint at in the Psukim, and it's left for the Chachamim to explain to us what exactly is going on. Anyway, so the pasuk says, so he tells Vashti to come, as we learned yesterday, in what condition he wanted her to come, and she didn't want to, because Porcha Batsaras, and also Lazanov, and all that. So the pasuk continues, Vayiktsev HaMelech Ma'od, the king was very angry, Vachamoseh Baravoy, and his anger and his fury flared within. It said, bottom of page, you're Dalit in Megillah. Now already the top of page 28, yeah. So the question is, my shochale did dokave chamosiv ozla. What exactly did she send him back a message that got him so furious? Or the Girsa in the printed Gemara is that my dokave kulahani. Why did his fury rage so much? If it's just that she told him I'm not going to come, that would be a reason for him to be upset or whatever, but not for him to be so furious. Amar Rava shochale means she sent him back an insulting message. Bar ahurayre da abba. The son of my father's stable boy, Bar Ahuriyeh, would be the son of. There were some Gersaris to take out the word Bar, which would mean that you were his stable boy. Now, it doesn't literally mean, she's not literally saying that her father was Belshazzar, the last king of Babel. She doesn't literally mean that Ahasuerus was his stable boy. Ahasuerus was the son of Daryavish and was of the royal family of Paras Amadai. But if she meant, compared to my father, you're no better than a stable boy. And she tells him, Abel Akovel Alpha Chamra Shossi, my father Belshazzar was able to drink as much as 1,000 regular people would, as we learned yesterday, that's how it says in Sefer Daniel when he made his party with the Kalim of the Bismikdash. The passage describes just that, Abel Akovel Alpha Chamra Shossi, below Robbie, and he didn't get drunk from it. Bahai Gavra, and that man, meaning you, Ahasuerus, Ishtati Le Mechamra, you've gotten foolish just after drinking some wine, and you're telling me such a degrading thing to do. Miyad, Bahamase, Baravoy, so therefore his anger erupted within him. He was extremely angry, not just that she refused, but that she sent him such an insulting message. It could be a Ness, or it could be that maybe he knew some kind of potions or whatever to keep it from having an effect on him, basically, or maybe just built up a tolerance to it after a while, you know. I don't know. But whatever, you find in the Psukim in Daniel over there, by the way, so he's drinking over there and having his party, and they're having a grand old time until all of a sudden when the hand comes and writes on the wall, then all of a sudden it mentions over there Belshazzar is terrified and he's calling for everybody to come and explain what's going on, so he obviously still had his wits about him. So now Vashti is telling him, whereas you, Ahasuerus, are nothing like that. A couple of interesting nuances in this then. First of all, Marsha points out, V'chamoseh bar of voy. Why the word voy, which means in or with him, means that it was something that had to do with him personally, where first of all, she didn't even call him your majesty. She just called him a high gavra, that man, like Sam a commoner, and she calls him names like that. So therefore, V'chamoseh bar of voy, particularly his anger flared about what was something involving him personally. Then Yehoyada points out a couple of things in it. First of all, if the fact is Ahasuerus wasn't actually a stable boy, she's just trying to put him down relative to Belshazzar, why'd she have to use the marshal of a stable boy? He says, because what does a stable boy do? He takes care of horses. So she's telling him, you know, horses we find in Psukim are a symbol of being very much into znus. Horses are very lusty creatures, and they're very much into that kind of thing. And she's telling him, by ordering me to come and in this state, as we learned yesterday, you're acting no better than a horse. There's a vort also on when V'chamoseh bar avoy, the problem was, so Ben Yehoyada says another point as well. Why did she do that anyway? What was she thinking? She couldn't just send him back a message saying, I'm sorry, I can't come, I'm not feeling well or whatever. What possessed her to send such an insulting message? So Ben Yehoyada says, because she figured she's being smart over here. Why didn't she want to come? As we learned yesterday, because she had saras and she had a zonav, however exactly we explained a zonav. So she figures if she sends this back a calm message, I'm sorry, I can't make it because I'm not feeling well, then they're going to want to come to her. And that's not going to help. So therefore, she figured, I'll send an insulting message. I'll be so furious, then he won't want to come. She didn't realize she was going to lose her head a little bit. There's also a vote on it, on Chamosse Bar Avot. There's a vote, I think, from the Vilna Gaon that says a lot of times when a person has something that happens to him that makes him angry, a lot of times he can talk it over with somebody else, and that itself will make vents to somebody else, and that itself makes him feel better. Here, Achashverosh doesn't have that. He can't very well vent to somebody else and tell him what Vashti told him, because it's highly insulting, so therefore it stayed bottled up, and therefore he was extremely angry. Okay.
Her father was so brave.
What the
heck? Gold, yeah. Silver,
he was a smart man. It was that he was able to drink, yeah. Right. Well, I mean, in context, you can understand why she's using that, because she's saying he was able to keep his wits about him no matter how much he drank, and you're becoming silly and idiotic when you do. That's why she mentioned that particular point, but yeah. Okay. Pasuk continues, the king then said to the Chachamim who know the times. Now, if it just said Chachamim, Marsha points out, then it could be just any wise men that he had on hand. For example, you have Parai's Chachamim or whatever. But when it says Yodei Ha'itim, the ones who know the times, that we find that particularly by Chachmei Yisrael, and particularly by Shevet Yisachar, who were known for their expertise in that, as in fact the Pasuk calls them, Yodid Bina La'itim, in a Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, and they were the ones, they made up the members of Sanhedrin who decide on Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibur HaShana. So man Chachamim Rabbanim. So who are the Chachamim? Means the Chachamim of this Pasuk then means the rabbis, and Yodid Itim means Shiyodim La'ab HaShana B'lekvay HaDoshim. They're the ones who know when to declare an Ibur Yer and when to be Mekadosh the month, where the calculations for it, as we know, are fairly complex when it involves knowing exactly when the moon is going to be visible and exactly when the Tufah is and so forth. So they were experts in this kind of thing. Why Dafka is he calling on them? Anaf Yosef brings a very interesting idea here from Rabbi Yonason Eibeshitz. He says like this: let's calculate when these events were taking place. Now the Pesukim mentioned there was a 180-day party and then there was a 7-day party. Before that, it mentions that he had a party for Yomim Rabim Shmonim Ma'asyoy. So there's a medrash that says that since Yomim means two and Rabim means three, as we find in other places in the Gemara, that means he made like a pre-party for 5 days. So altogether there were 192 days of partying. 5 days of a pre-party, 180 of the party for Chel Paras and Modai and the rest of the big wigs over there, and then 7 days for the people of Shushan. Rabbi Yonason goes on to say, he started this on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and if you calculate then, he started on Rosh Hashanah, rather, because after all, as we learned in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, that's the beginning of years when we count a new year for Goyish kings. So he began it on Rosh Hashanah, and it was lasting then for 192 days, which brings us to, now if you figure the average length of the months usually alternate in our calendar between 29 and 30 days, so it comes out the first 6 months of the year come out to 177 days from Tishrei through Adar, and then you have 15 days, which brings you to Pesach. That would be the total 192 days. Mind you, there are Midrashim that learn differently. I think there's a Medrash that says that the day that Vashti was killed was Yom Kippur, but the Rabbi Yonason obviously is following a different understanding that it was the first day Pesach. Well, now when Vashti disobeyed Ahasuerus, now Ahasuerus is thinking like this. Another event that had happened only a few years earlier, also on the first night of Pesach, that was when Belshazzar, who we said was Vashti's father, had made his party, and that was the night when the writing was on the wall, and that night he was killed. Obviously, Goyim don't have a concept of a yahrzeit as we do, per se, but there would still be the idea that the day that her father was killed would be something special for her. So therefore, Ahasuerus is wondering, is it in fact now the anniversary of that date? Is it really now on the Jewish calendar, which more or less the Goyim follow a similar kind of thing, or at least they did back then? Is it that same date? In that case, then that sort of provides an excuse for Vashti's refusal. Because after all, look, you know, it's her father's yahrzeit, so to speak, so therefore I can't be too harsh on her. On the other hand, if it was, let's say, if one of these months was Chaser or Mole, or if it was, or if there was an Ibriyar, then it's not going to be the first day of Pesach, and then in that case, you have less of an excuse. So that would explain why he goes to Chachamim Yodei Ha'iti. Ben Yehoyada says a different vote on it. He says there's a medrash, or there's something, I don't remember what the mocker is, that Vashti was actually only a little girl when Belshazzar was killed, and then the whole Babylonian Empire came to an end. Kurdish and Daryavish found her among the ruins of the palace over there after they had conquered everything, and they took her to their capital, and eventually she became Ahasuerus's wife. By the time, the part of the reason, one of the things it says why Ahasuerus made the party in his third year, now we learned a couple of blocks ago that the reason the Gemara says is because he figured then the 70 years of Golus Bavel are up based on his calculation. But another point is also that it was also to celebrate his wedding with Vashti. Now that she's old enough to get married, by this time she was 12 or 13 years old, which is the age when a girl is reasonably ready for marriage. So therefore the question will be, well, again, you know, have 12 years in fact passed? Is she in fact a gdola according to halacha, and therefore, you know, Ahasuerus would, to that extent, respect that as well, and then therefore she's responsible for what she does, or is she maybe still, can we maybe still consider her a katana, and therefore she's less responsible? And so that's Ben Yehoyada's take on why he turned to the Sanhedrin. Anyway, so he continues, kedos malasos, what exactly according to the law should be done with Vashti, means, omalahu, so Ahasuerus tells the chachamim, dainuha niyala, judge her. Amri, the Chachamim, realized, no matter what, we're between a rock and a hard place here. We're in trouble if we get involved with it here. Hechi Nevin, how should we do it? Name of the Galitla, should we tell him that, yes, she acted in a terrible way and you should execute her? L'machem, v'fakach lechamra, tomorrow, or very soon, his wine is going to dissipate. He's going to sober up. V'dochula, and he's going to remember her, as in fact happened in Perek Beis of the Megillah, or Boy Laminan, and then he's going to demand from us, why did you give me the advice to execute her? Namely, the Shavka, should we tell him, leave her alone? Hash the Lema, now, when he's in his state of drunkenness and anger, he's going to say, obviously the Chachamim don't care about the fact that he and his entire kingdom, and he personally, was insulted, so one way or the other, we're going to be in trouble. So Ella Mutter Misalik Nafshin. So they thought to themselves, Chachamim, let's better withdraw from the whole business. Let's tell Ahasuerus that we can't judge such a thing. Omruloi. So they told him. They gave him the following excuse: Miyom Shachora Beis Mikdash. Ever since the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, the Golinu Me'artzenu, and ever since we went into Golus from our land, Nitla Eitzimimenu. Good advice has been taken away from us. Ve'inonu Yodin Lodun Dinin Afoshes. We don't know how to judge Dinin Afoshes. We don't know how to weigh the various factors when it comes to Dinin Afoshes. Ella, so they told him, Zil Gabe Amun and Moav. Go to the wise men of Amun and Moav. Diyasvi Aduchtaihu. They're still living in their places. They haven't gone into Golos. Kachamra de Yosef al-Judaye. They're like wine still sitting on its dregs. Like you leave a barrel of wine in the same place for a long time. All the dregs and all the everything sinks to the bottom. And the wine and most of the wine in the barrel is very clear and pure. But like Pog Tame, and the taste of it has not dissipated because it's kept closed and it's kept still. So they tell them, go to the wise men of Ammon and Moab. Now, obviously, he's going to have to find people of Ammon and Moab who are in Shushan, which is not their native country. Fine, but they mean, in other words, the nation as a whole has not gone into Golus. You have over here wise men from Ammon and Moab who came to the capital because it's the center of power, and they came there to be closer to the center of power. But their nations as a whole have not gone into Golus, unlike ours. So Tosfos brings up the point, actually, that the Gemara in Brachas tells us that Ammon was one of the nations that had been exiled by Sancheirav. They have the whole story over there, which it brings from Mishnah in Masechta Yadayim, where Yehuda, a man named Yehuda, who was a ger from Ammon, came to the Beis Medrash during the time when Ram Gamliel had been deposed as Nasi and Rav Elazar ben Azariah had taken over instead. And this Yehuda goes over there during the time of Boi Bayoim, when the doors of the Bate Medrash were wide open and hundreds of new Talmidim are coming. So this Yehuda Ger Amoni came to ask whether he's allowed to marry a born Bas Yisrael. And there ended up being a whole debate back and forth about it between Ram Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, where Rabbi Yeshua pointed out that after all, the people of Ammon have been taken into exile by Sancheirav. and therefore that people who are living in Ammon now are not necessarily the original Ammonim, and therefore there should be no problem. And in the end, in fact, they voted that, the Chachamim voted that way and said that the Sihurda can intermarry freely into the Jewish people. That, by the way, is the halacha nowadays. Even nowadays, you have, if a ger comes from one of those places, from Ammon, from Moav, from Mitzrayim, from Edom, we assume called the Porish, Merov Porish, since Sancheirib mixed up all the nations, then any random goy who comes from those places is highly unlikely to be from one of those original nations that lived there, and therefore is allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people. Anyway. So Tosfos points out, based on that Gemara, it comes out that Ammon had been taken into Golus and mixed up. So Tosfos actually says, in our Gemara, it shouldn't say Ammon, it should say only Moav. So Moav didn't necessarily, now it's true, we do find that Sancheirev confused all the nations, but nevertheless, it doesn't necessarily mean literally all of them. There may be exceptions. Tosfos says Mitzrayim would be another exception. We find the Gemara where there's someone named Minyamin, who was a ger from Mitzrayim in the times of the Tanoim, and he says that he has plans of how to make sure that his grandchildren are going to be kosher lover b'kol, because Mitzrayim are only banned for the first and second generation. So we see that in his times, the times of the Tanoim, hundreds of years after Sancheirib, he still has to be concerned about his ancestry from Mitzrayim. So Tosfos discusses it over here, and Tosfos discusses at greater length than a few other places in Shas, this point of which nations exactly were the ones that were exiled and then moved around by Sancheirib, and which were not, and it comes out that Moav may, that Ammon was, but Moav wasn't, and therefore over here it would be the Chachamim are referring him specifically to the Chacham of Moav. And in fact, again, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is even Moav and even Mitzrayim, nowadays you are allowed to accept Geirim, not just to accept Geirim, but they're allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people, because we say the Rambam passed that all of them, without exception, were mixed up by Sancheirev, and therefore, unlike what Tosfos is saying, that there were certain exceptions, and therefore that any goy that comes from those places is not from one of those nations. Even though they were talking about, well, in the case of Ammon and Moav, it would be dafka the males. In the case of Mitzrayim and Edom, it's both the men and the women, but they're barred for the first and second generation. But again, yeah, there's an example. I think the Chacham Tzvi, either the Chacham Tzvi or Rabbi Yaakov Emden, his son, I don't remember which, but one of them was asked. There was a fellow from Italy who had become a ger, and he asked, since we have all over Shas where the Romans are mentioned as the descendants of Edom, then is there a problem? Is it ger Edom? And the answer was, aside from what the Rambam is saying about all the nations having mixed up, whichever with the Chacham Tzvi or Rabbi Yaakov Emden, whichever one, points out that Bechlal, it doesn't necessarily mean that all the Italians are descended from Edom. Most of them, in fact, are descended from a nation, from a nation descended from Yefes called Kittim, which is one of the sub-branches of the Greek nations, the patricians, the noblemen over there of Rome from ancient times. They were the ones descended from Edom. And nowadays, your average Italian is not going to be able to trace his ancestry back all the way to them, so therefore there's no problem. Anyway, so the Gemara says, V'tayma Omrulay. In fact, what the Chachamim were telling him was not just an empty excuse. There was, in fact, a logical basis behind it. Dichtiv, as in fact the Pasuk says, Shanan Moav min Urav, the Novi Yumia says about Moav, Moav has been calm since his youth, meaning he's never suffered a major invasion and have his people taken into Golus. The Shoketu El Shmarav, it's sitting quietly on its dregs, like the marshal that the Chachamim are giving to Achashverosh. Like you have a barrel of wine that's sitting there calmly, and everything, and all the dregs have sunk to the bottom. But like Hurak Mikli El Keli, it has not been poured from one keli into another, which then would stir up all the dregs and everything. Over Goyla Loipalach, he's not gone into Golus. Al Kain Omad Time Aboy, therefore his taste has remained with him. The Reche Le Nomer, and his smell, his aroma has not changed. The word Nomer means to change. So therefore, so yeah, the Chachamim were making a very good point to Achashverosh. Moav has never suffered a Golus like that, and therefore their minds are much clearer, and therefore if you want good advice about what to do with Vashti, ask them. So therefore the pasuk continues, the point being, in other words, we shouldn't think that those are the Chachamim Yodei Ha'itim of the previous pasuk, but rather, two pasukim earlier, rather, first he had gone to the Chachamim Yodei Ha'itim, and then when they told him, we can't, then he went to Kaushin or Shesar, etc., who are the Goyish wise men, his Goyish advisors, that he's going to ask, and was saying that primarily, Marashah says, evidently, most, if not all of them, must have been from Ammon and Moab, as they're telling him over here specifically to go to Ammon and Moab. We find that Memuchan, who the Gemara is going to say soon was Haman, was from Amalek, in the same way these people may have been from various nations. So now, what's the significance of these names? In particular, the question is, we never find these names mentioned again in the Megillah. So why does it need to say their names b'chlal? And also, why does it say b'akol roiv eivav in Lashon Yochid? It should be b'akroivim eivav. So therefore, Amar Rav Levi, pasuk zeh kulei al shem korbanos nema. This whole pasuk is actually hinting to the korbanos. So Rashi says the malachi asharis at this point in the story are, so to speak, reminding Hashem about the korbanos that the Jewish people used to bring, and this way they're saying that, look, Vashti now deserves to be punished and destroyed and removed from her, and then removed from her position as queen, because she was the one, in particular, as we talked about before, she being the daughter of Belshazzar and the great granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, she was the one who was telling Ahasuerus, don't allow the Jews' Beis Hamikdash to be rebuilt, so she deserves to be punished and removed from her position, and Esther take over her place instead. So therefore, the Megillah is mentioning their names to also hint at the korbanos. This was a schus that was coming up at this point. Marashah brings from Targum on Megillah Esther that it wasn't just the Malachim; it was also these very same Chachamim that we said before, the Bnei Yisachar, the Yodei Bina L'Itim. They, seeing what's going on, they right on the spot daven to the Eivishter that in the schus of the korbanos, then Hashem should punish Vashti with what she deserves. So, how is it? Kaushana means Omra Malacha Esharis, Lefna Kodesh Baruch Hu, Ribbon Shalom, Klum Hikrubal of Fanecha Ojikachavim, Korim B'nei Shana. The word Kaushana we're seeing as an acronym of Korim, which means fat sheep, B'nei Shana, that are within their first year, Kederach Sheikruvi Yisrael Fanecha, the way the Jewish people have. Meaning, in other words, that here you have the Jewish people have a great schus, that every day they would bring a Tomet Shal Shachar and a Tomet Shal Ben Habayim. Similarly, Shesar, Klum Ekruvel Fanecha Shtei Torim, or Bnei Yonah, the word Shesar is short for Shtei Torim, two turtle doves, which are, so Marashah points out, the first one that they mentioned, Kaushana, represents the korban of a rich person. You have two sheep, one in the morning, one in the evening. And then now you have, even a poor person brings korbanos, and he brings a poor person's korban, which would be two birds. So the Malachim, and according to Targum, also the Chachamim, are davening to Hashem in the schus of that. The third one, Admosa, where that represents, Klum Bonol Fanecha Ovid Chachamim Mizbeach Shal Adama, did the Goyim ever build for you, Hashem, a Mizbeach of earth, Kedichtiv Mizbeach Adama Tassali, and that was where, after all these Korbanos were brought. Talshish is Klum Shim Shal Fanecha Bebigdei Kohanah. Did the Goyim ever serve before you with the Bigdei Kohanah? Dichtivu Talshish V'Shoyham V'Yoshvei, where the fourth row of stones on the Choshen begins with Talshish. So the name of the advisor Talshish then represents that. Because the continuation, Marashah points out, is the Malachim are mentioning first the korban of a rich person, then the korban of a poor person. Both of them were brought on the Mizbeach, and by who? By the Kohen Gadol. Next. Meres, when the fifth advisor is named Meres, which represents Klum Merisul Fanecha Badam, did the Goyim ever stir the blood in front of you? We have we have certain cases where the blood of a korban has to be stirred because for one reason or another there's going to be a while before you sprinkle it on the Mizbeach. One example involves the korbanos of Yom Kippur, if you shech some of them out of order. Not out of order. The Avodah of Yom Kippur itself requires the blood to be stirred for a while because you have the Dam HaPur is only going to be sprinkled much later in the Avodah. And meanwhile, you have the Tertus in between. So for it to not congeal, they would have somebody sitting there and stirring it. But you have other examples as well. Involving the Korban Pesach was brought before the Korban Tomid also. So the Goyim never did that for you, whereas the Jews have. So that's represented by Meres. Mausina represents Klum Merusul Fanecha B'Menachas. Mausina is also Meloshin Meres, which means mixing. So did they ever stir the Menachas in front of, did the Goyim ever stir Menachas in front of you, where Mincha is made out of flour and oil, which are mixed together? And that would be that would be the poorest, the meres merusol panecha badam would be the kapara that's accomplished through a korban, and marusina of korban mincha would represent the dalai dalus, the poorest of the poor. Even they bring a korban for a nachas ruach to the Eibishter, and they mix the flour and the oil. Rav Yaakov Emden points out, by the way, the word marusina breaks down into meres na, where he says specifically it can refer to the minchas chavitin, of which the pasuk says. That's the minchas chavitin that was brought every day by the Kohen Gadol. It goes through a whole process where they boil it and they bake it and they do multiple things. And the Gemara says on it, te'ofena, the word tufine stands for te'ofena. It's baked, like only half baked, and then it's like par baked. So therefore, marusina represents the mixing of the flour and the oil that they made for that korban that was par baked, that was made na. So that's marusina. And the last one, Muchan, from Hechino Lefanecha, Shulchan, Shalachim Apanim. Did the Goyim ever set up before you? Did they prepare before you a Shulchan of the Lachim Apanim? So, with all those chusim, then you should stand up for the Jewish people and give Vashti what she deserves. We talked about over the last couple of days something that the Maharam Shif says. He has a whole series of interesting short drushes on different things from all over Gemara and a lot about Purim and whatever. They're printed for some reason in the back of his Kedushim at the end of his Kedushim to Chulin of all places. But anyway, he mentions over there, we talked about over the last couple of days that Ahasuerus, the way he was doing things in his party, it was like a lo'umaseh of the avodah in the Beis Hamikdash. He's wearing the big de kahuna, and he's making sure there's more food than drink, just like there was in the Mizbeach and so forth. So therefore, now the Malachim are saying, you know what, he's doing that corrupted version of the avodah. You should realize, Hashem, there's a true version of the avodah, which Ahasuerus isn't doing anything like that, and stick up for the Jewish people. So that's why it mentions the names of the seven advisors. Miyad Bayom Memuchan. So right away, Memuchan speaks up. He was the seventh of the advisors. So Tonim, Memuchan Zeham. We learn in a Braisa that Memuchan is none other than Haman. The Lama Nikoshme Memuchan, Shemuchan the Poronis. He's called Memuchan because he's prepared for punishment. Rashi says he's destined already from the beginning of the story to be hanged. It's actually brought through a Mephoshim that bring an interesting idea that says when it comes to the Gzeira on the Jewish people, they did after all deserve it for the reasons that we talked about the other day, Nenu Vesugosa and Shtachvul of Selim and whatever. But because they did Shuva, the Eibishter had Rachmanus on them and overturned the Gzeira and Venapechu. Mashenkin, for example, this that Haman planned to hang Mordechai, Lachatchila, it was never destined in Menashemayim that should ever come true. Lachatchila, it was destined from when he made the gallows that it would be for him. So therefore, all the way at the beginning, he's already Muchan, he's already prepared for Poronus. Marashah points out another point as well, Muchan the Poronus, he's very ready to bring Poronus on other people. First he got Vashti killed, and then he was trying to get all the Jews killed. Actually, there's an interesting pirush on the Megillah called Yosef Lekach by Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, who's a very interesting character in Jewish history. He was a rov in different places, like almost anywhere in the Jewish world that you can think of at that time. He lived for a period of time and was a rov there in Cyprus and in Egypt and Crimea and Poland and whatever. He got around a lot. Anyway, he wrote an interesting pirush on Megillah Esther called Yosef Lekach. He points out that it's kind of both, really. Because Haman jumped the gun over here, as the Gemara is saying, and he's the one who gave the advice that Vashti should be killed, and Lias called Ishtera Bevesa, that every man is going to be the chief in his own household, and everybody has to listen to him. That made it possible later on, when Ahasuerus is angry at Haman, to right away unilaterally order him killed. Mashenkin, if you had before that if it hadn't been like that, if Ahasuerus has to consult with his advisors like he did now with Vashti, he would have had to consult with other people what to do with Haman, and Haman wouldn't have gotten hanged. So he brought about his own downfall by jumping the gun over here and then giving advice that Vashti should be killed. Anyway, so why Memuchan? Omer of Abba Bakahana Mikan Shehedyat Kofitz Barush. We also learn from here that the simple one, the least important, tends to jump to the head. You see, he's mentioned seventh among all the advisors, implying that he's the least important, and yet he's the one who speaks up out of turn ahead of all of them. Right, the Chacham wouldn't speak in front of somebody else who's greater than him in Chachma at an age, and he Mamuchan didn't pay any attention to that, and he jumped the gun and then jumped in front of everybody else. And it's in Pirkei Avos. But yeah, in fact, there's an explanation that that's what it means when it says Vayomer Mamuchan lifnei Hamelach Vaasarim. Doesn't just mean lifnei as in he was speaking in front of them. Means he was speaking ahead of them. So without even waiting for them, that's Eitz Yosef says. Why does it say Lifnei Hamelach Vaasarim? Who else would he be speaking in front of? It means Lifnei, as in before. So he jumped the gun before any of them. Tosfos actually brings it's put over here in parenthesis within Rashi that Yesh Omrim, a different explanation, that actually there's Yesh Omrim that Memuchan is Daniel. And in that case, then why did he go and give this advice that Lias Talish Sergavesa is all of that? He was married to a noble woman who was greater and more important than him. So he, for example, he couldn't get her to speak his language. He was having to be subservient to her and speak her language. Whether we mean she was a goyish and noble woman and they forced him to marry her and he had no choice but to keep her in his house or something, or maybe whether we mean she was a Jewish noble woman and she lorded it over him, whatever. So now he figured he has the opportunity to set things right in his own household. Anyway, so according to that, Memuchan is actually Daniel. There is actually an interesting thing that's brought that Daniel and Haman actually have the same gematria. There's actually an explanation we're going to learn later on that Hasoch is a Daniel, and Gemara is going to give two reasons why he was called Hasoch, but there's an interesting explanation. It's also because since it's the same gematria as Haman, he didn't want to go by that name anymore, and therefore he started going by a different name, Hasoch. By the same token, you find that David is the same gematria as Doyeg, his arch enemy, and that's one reason why in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, his name is always spelt David with an extra yud, so it shouldn't be the same gematria. There is actually a different reason that's given for that as well, which is because in Divrei Hayamim, it focuses a lot on how David set up everything for the Beis Hamikdash, including the 24 Mishmaros Kohanah that he and Shmuel set up. David with a yud is gematria 24, so he's called that in Sefer Divrei Hayamim in token of that. But yeah, so we see that sometimes when a person has a gematria, his name has the gematria of somebody else who's a Rasha, they like to alter it a little bit so it shouldn't be quite the same. There's something similar. I remember once hearing there's a Lubavitcher family Spalter where they ever told them to spell their name slightly differently than usual because otherwise it had some kind of untoward gematria. I don't remember what it was, but yeah. Anyway.
This idea that the Ashkenazim use the word Yirmiyah, they don't say Yirmiyahu or Yishayahu.
I've heard of that in particular with Yishayahu because he was killed by Menashe, so therefore people don't want to use the full name, so they use an abbreviated version of it, Yishayah. Yeah, I've heard of that. I think Rabbi Willam, all of Shalom has something about that in Ziv HaShemes. I don't remember about Yirmiyahu because he didn't. Yeah, it was Yirmiyahu. I think also it says that they at some point they killed him because they didn't like his nevuah or whatever. So yeah, it could be. Yeah. All right. Anyway. So he gives the advice that Vashti should be killed, and Lias Kol Ish Ser Bevesa, he says in addition that every man should be the ruler in his house. Omar Rava, and sure enough, the Pesukim say that they sent out letters throughout the entire empire announcing that. Omar Rava, Ilmola Igris Rishonis, you should know, says Rava, if it weren't for those first letters, Lon Shnaim, Sen Am Shoysor, Sora the Pollet, there wouldn't have been a single remnant or leftover left of the enemies of the Jewish people, which is, of course, the Gemara's usual euphemism for the Jewish people themselves, meaning, because Amri, when they got these letters, they thought to themselves, my high Shadalon, what kind of nonsense is this that Achashverosh is sending us, Lias Kalish Serbevesa, that every man should be the ruler in his household, Pshita. Obviously, even the most unimportant person in his household, korcha literally means a bald person. Rashi paraphrases it with the word dowdy, that means like a weaver, which is usually considered to be a very degraded kind of work. Actually, Rashi says the word gaudon, so gaudon maybe means a person who's bald because he keeps on scratching his hair. Marsha understands it as gaudi, which means a weaver. Whatever, even the least important man, Bevese in his household, Pardash Galahavi, he's still going to be the master of the house. So why does Achashverosh need to be telling us that? So therefore, in other words, so that caused them in general to have much less respect for orders and letters and whatnot that come from the royal palace. So now, when years later, when Haman sent out his letters with the Xavis, and what do you have? Haman had written the letters in Nisan, and the official date that they're supposed to be doing things is your Gimel Adar. If it hadn't been for this, why would the Goyim have waited 12 months? They would have started, they would have jumped the gun and started killing Jews right away. But now that they saw what happened with these first letters, and they realize that Shvedish is prone to giving out orders that are just shusim, then they realize, let's not be so quick about it. You never know, Achashverosh, this may be another one of Achashverosh's dumb ideas, and he's soon going to rescind it, and we're going to be in trouble, and therefore they held their fire, and therefore nothing, and therefore the Jews were safe until Yud Gimel Adar. With that said, though, you know, this still could have been that some individual people might have, and you have the famous thing that the Alter Rebbe says in Torah Ur, that entire year the Jews were in a state of Mesiras Nefesh. In particular, the Alter Rebbe learns if any of them had been willing to convert out of Yiddishkeit, Rachman Al-Tzlan, then the Goyim would have left them be. And yet not one single Yid did, even though they're in that danger the entire year, and therefore that was the schus in which they were saved and in which were not going to. The Malbim, by the way, makes an interesting point in his Pirush on the Psukim. He says, B'chlal, that the original Gzeira was never actually rescinded. When you look at the Psukim carefully, you find the original Gzeira was Lahashmid Lair Glavid. That was never actually rescinded because Kiksav HaShenichta B'Shem HaMelech, etc., you don't overturn. Rather, what it was is that Ahasuerus gave permission for the Jews to be able to defend themselves. So then the result was Nafal Pachad HaYehudim and all of that. So during that whole year, they still are in danger in the sense, after all, Yud Gimel Adar, the permission is still available for the Goyim to go harm Jews if they want to, if they figure they're going to get away with it. Because now the Jews have the right to defend themselves, which without Mordechai's letters they wouldn't have had, but you still see, therefore, they really were in danger throughout that entire year. And therefore, that fits then with the Alter Rebbe's point about that they were in a state of Mesiras Nefesh that whole year. Next, Perek Beis of the Megillah begins that Achashverosh realizes what happened and he feels very bad and his servants tell him v'yafkid amalach kidim, the king should appoint officials and they should go search throughout the kingdom for every nairab sola. Omer of Nachman Omer Rabba, my dichtin. What does it mean a pasuk in Mishlei that illuminates this little episode in the Megillah? The pasuk says kol orum yasa b'das, any smart person, Orum means smart and crafty, like Nachashaya Orum, Yasa Bedas, he acts with Das, he acts in a sensible way. Still, but the fool, Yifrosh Ivelas, he explicitly says, or he spreads out the foolishness. So what is this referring to? You have the contrast, in other words, between the Orum and the Ksil, where they're trying to do approximately the same thing, but the Orum goes about it in a smart way, and the Ksil goes about it in a foolish way. That would be the example. We contrast David and Achashverosh. Kol Orem Yasa B'das, that David Melech Yisrael. Dichtiv Bey, at the beginning of Sefer Melachim, you have the story. David is cold. He can't keep himself warm. You have the famous explanation. Rashi says over there, because many years earlier you had cut off the corner of Shaul's coat in the cave over there. Therefore, now clothing wasn't keeping him warm. Rashi brings over there another point from a medrash that after the whole thing over there by Gerda and Arav Nahayavusi, when there was a Malach, when he saw a Malach with a sword destroying and killing people, and he had such a pachad that from then on he couldn't keep warm anymore. Anyway, they took him there in Malachim say that his advisors told him you should find the Naira Bsula and she'll lie together with you and she'll keep you warm with her body. So, let them find for our master, for his majesty the king, a Nairab Sula. So therefore, and the point is, it was clear that David is not the, it was clear that David wants only one Nairab. And in fact, also, in addition, he's not even going to marry her or have relations with her, he's just going to use her body heat. As in fact, the pasuk goes on to say that she remained a Sula. So, he had reached the maximum number of wives. That was why he couldn't marry her, right? The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin. Yeah. Mephoshim on the Pasuk also say that maybe also Absalah has more of a natural body heat. Whatever the case, the point is, V'chomam dehavale brata aisa niale. So anybody who had a daughter who might be suitable for the purpose would willingly bring her because he knows that, whichever one David wants, he's gonna keep in the palace, which turned out to be Avishag HaShunamis. Any other ones he'll send home and they'll be no worse for the experience. As opposed to still Yifres Ivelas, when the pasuk says the fool spreads out and expresses the foolishness, Zachashreish. Dichtibev Yakid Amelch Kedim. Here we're saying the king should appoint commissioners throughout the empire and find every Nairob Sola. So that means all of them have to be brought. And in the end, he's only going to choose one as the queen. Meanwhile, the other ones he's all going to have relations with as well. So each one is going to end up a lot worse off for the experience. So therefore, to demand to have a legrati, tamramine. So therefore, so anybody who has a daughter who might be suitable for the purpose would tend to hide her from the king's officials, because realistically, what's the chance that she's going to end up being queen? And instead, if she doesn't, then she's just been used and thrown away by Ahasuerus, and as the Sukkim say over there, kept in the base on Nashim Sheni, and nobody wanted that. So therefore it was hard. It was a lot harder to find them. So therefore, we're saying that Ahasuerus went about it in a very stupid way, as compared to David HaMelech, who went about his same kind of search in a very wise way. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola, Beis Ad Beis. We're very close now to the time of Ge'ola, so every year has to get himself used to Ge'ola and put himself into a state and a feeling of Ge'ola. That means that a person transforms his own individual day into a day of individual Ge'ola and turning his own individual area into Eretz Yisrael, Machta Eretz Yisrael. A person does that by making that his avoda right now and right in this time and in this place should be in the tachlos hashlemus, in the greatest possible perfection in machshava dibra ma'isa, and that it's a geula dika kind of time and place. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos. So we talked yesterday about straining liquids and drinking through a cloth or some other kind of strainer or whatever. So here you have in a similar vein. You have, let's say, a cup of coffee. And you have coffee grounds at the bottom of it, or any other kind of drink that you have, like we just had in the Gemara about wine with dregs or other kinds of things like that, where you have something at the bottom that you don't want to pour off with the rest of it. So when you're pouring it off, you have to be careful not to pour off the entire liquid, but leave some of the liquid together with the psoilus. The Alter Rebbe says, actually, if you're going to be drinking it right away, you don't need to do that, because then, as usual, you have a bor oichum with psoilus, and it's not such a problem. Similarly, you have, for example, you have milk that curdled, then you wouldn't be able to take the cream off the top unless whatever you're going to eat now. And there also, you'd have to leave a little bit of the cream on top of the milk. And again, the Alter Rebbe is saying if you're doing it right away, then that's not necessarily necessary.